This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Ashley Lim's father was detained without trial from 1968 to 1974 under Malaysia's Draconian International Security Act. So in her film, Kesa Ayaku, Ashley revisits both her parents' past and tries to make sense of the hardships they face during these times, but also after. So on today's episode of Stay Home and Watch, a series that we do in collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, we're going to revisit this 2016 film to explore the theme of detention without trial, but also the other underlying issues that the film brings up, including the right to freedom of speech in a democracy. And joining me to do that, of course, is Ashley, who is also a visual effects consultant. Welcome, Ashley. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Very good. I feel very good. How are you, Juliet?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I just want to say what an amazing film you made. I understand you were a first-time filmmaker when you did it, but it was such a powerful film. You know, congratulations on that. It was a really wonderful film.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. And that's what we're going to speak about today, right? So let's get straight to it. So I mentioned in the intro that it was your father who was detained without trial for all those years, right? But this is also about both your parents. Am I correct? Special focus on your dad, of course. Can you share, let's start off with his story, your dad's story. What sort of conditions did he grow up in? I mean, these are things that you bring up in the film, am I correct?
Yes. He actually grew up in a very small village, and his parents, I mean my grandparents, they were both like rubber estate workers, and they worked very hard. And my father has many siblings, about 10 of them, and that's why the hardship they gone through was very difficult, and they have to make the ends meet. But my father was the only one among the siblings that graduated from high school, and he struggled himself throughout the educations. He actually paid his own fee. He worked as a construction worker after school, and he told me that his name was always been announced by the school because he was the very few student who paid late for the fee.
Oh no.
Yeah. So he was like going through, but his mother was very supportive to him about his studies, his pursuit of all these things. And somehow he knew that that is the only way that could probably make change, you know, to not only to him, but probably make change to the family.
Okay.
Yeah, through the education that he probably has better opportunity for jobs.
So, I mean, but even though, he graduated from high school, he still, I suppose, didn't have the funds to further his education. Am I correct?
So, yes.
Yeah. And he ended up also working, I suppose, as a blue collar worker. That's how you describe it in the film, right? How, I guess, you know, what sort of conditions led to that, to him becoming a blue collar worker? And we both know from the film that he became, you know, involved in the Labour Party. How did all of that come together and happen?
Actually, at the time she was graduated from high school, right, there were very, very few working options available for him. It was like not easy to find a job, like even a teaching job or whatever. So he had to work. At first, he worked at Bukit Serampang, that is a northern Johor, next to Bukit Gombak, as an estate worker there for like 7 to 8 months. That's what he said. And then after that, he moved to Klang to work as a salesperson. No, to sell things to the estate residents there. And then after that, he went to JB. He found a job actually in iron foundry. But then the manager heard, like, you know, after that heard of like him actually having a high school certificate, they were very reluctant to hire him because they said this is overqualified their job. So yes, so that's why that he couldn't get the job, and then he have to move around in JB. So he worked in textile before, he worked in many factories, yeah, before he just have to there. And how he actually start involving in Labour Party, those friends that he met in JB when he first arrived there, they were actually the members of Labour Party.
Okay.
And at the time, most of the members of Labour Party, they were from like the grassroots of the society. Mostly, they are definitely workers, and very few of them will receive education. So that's why they invited my dad to go over to teach Chinese and sometime BM for like their adult class at night. So that's how he got to know Labour Party. And later on, he went to a protest in KL before in 1965. It was actually the time that I think the diplomat Johnson from US, he came to visit Malaysia. And then they went there to protest because at the time it was the Vietnam and US war, Vietnam war, the period of time. And then soon after that, the factory heard that he participated in the protest. He was fired. Wow. Also at the same time that he later joined the Labour Party officially. That was back to 1965. And he rose to the leader role very fast because, yeah, as I said, that he received his high school certificate. That actually had some advantage to him that allowed him to actually be able to do messaging. He was the person that, you know, in charge all the party messaging and communications, where he produced banners, flyers to inform public and their members on issues faced like workers and how their rights had been violated. Right. And then he was later became very soon, I think the next year or whatever, he became the vice chair of the Tampoi division of Labour Party.
Okay, so he kind of steadily rose the ranks. And again, it goes back to the fact that, you know, he had his high school diploma, he was educated, he was literate. He could help, you know, disseminate information, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah. And I suppose that sort of leads us to, you know, why he was arrested, isn't it? Or, well, why he was detained without trial. I mean, talk to me about that, you know. So it was 1968. You know, both him and your mom, I don't think they were married at the time, but both were detained under the Internal Security Act, right? What happened? Let's start with your mother. What happened to your mother? Why was she, I mean, how did she come into this? Was she also part of the Labour Party?
No. She was actually part of the Workers' Union.
Ah, okay.
That was actually different from my father's. My father's actually, but at that time, I think at that era, they all consider, you know, the leftist movement.
Yep.
Yeah, include all the workers, whether or not you are actually a party members. As long as you fight against your right, your worker rights, you know, this is be considered or be labeled, I would say, be considered or acknowledged or recognized as a leftist. So my mom actually working at the time, she was working at a shoe factory in JB as well. And there were like four big shoe factories there. And all they ask for, you know, their management is to actually have a pay rise because the wages were way too low. They couldn't even support themselves. And many of them, they need to give money to their families. And that was the time, very difficult time. So they were asking for like, you know, an ang pao actually during the Chinese New Year. And I remember she said in the film, it was just $1.50. That they asked for.
And that
was denied.
Wow.
Okay. So then they, because of that, and at that time, even though we have the Employment Act 1955, I mean, of course, it was supposed to balance, you know, both sides, the capitalists, the management, and the workers' right as well. But somehow, the problem underlying this is always, you know, go back to who handle this, who execute it, who implement it. You know, even we have a law like this meant to protect the workers' right, but the authority who carry out the law, if they favor to, you know, the management side, then workers will, you know, have lots of difficulty to deal with. So that was a time that happened to her. And she was actually a vice chair at the time for the worker union in shoe factory.
Okay.
And she was arrested because her involvement in the, you know, the strike and all these things. But she actually shared with me, like the years that she looked back, she felt sympathized to those management as well because they wouldn't actually having a very good condition to allow and or to, you know, give all these benefits or, you know, to meet the demands of the workers, right? But it was just that, you know, it's the both side lah. It's the both sides that, you know, the struggles. So she says she has done what she thought that was right. Mm-hmm. But in a way that she also thought about when she recalled those memories, she also thought about that it wasn't also very easy for the management to handle all the demands, you know,
okay.
at that time. But okay. then, of course, things happen like that on strike. Police would be called in and they will do whatever they're necessary. Yeah, and then she was sent to the detention center for almost a year, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, a year. That was back to 1972.
Okay. That doesn't really commensurate with what was happening, right? I mean, it's really quite... again, it was without trial, right? It was detention. She was also under ISA, right?
Yes, also under ISA. Actually, the time, right, ISA has become like... I would say it's become a tool, you know? It's actually a tool for those that who have spoken up their right, you know?
To silence dissent, right?
Yes. Yeah. That was a tool. But to her... Her story is actually very different from my father's lah. And I have always wanted to document hers. She until now she's still very reluctant.
Okay.
I think maybe sometimes it's too personal. She not feeling comfortable. And also there was something happened to her within the workers' union. So she had some disagreement with the committee there. Mm-hmm. So she left the worker union. So, and then she felt that she rather not to talk behind all this because the person who had the, you know, dispute with her already passed on.
Okay.
She said that it would be unfair for the other side of the story if she told hers.
Yeah, what an amazing woman your mother is. So, okay, let's just go for one quick break, Ashley. When we come back, we'll find out more about your father's story. I mean, the film is called Kisah Ayahku. I'm speaking today to Ashley Lim. She's the director of Kisah Ayahku, or Stories from My Father, a 2016 film where she follows, you know, her father and also her mother's experiences of being detained without trial. We'll have more after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's another episode of Stay Home and Watch, a series done in collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, where we revisit past films done under the Freedom Film Festival. Today, we're looking back at the film Kisah Ayahku, or Stories from My Father. Joining me to discuss what the film is about is Ashley Lim, the film's director. And it's a very personal film, isn't it, Ashley? It's a story about your parents, but mostly about your father. And so we know he was detained under the ISA. He spent 7 years in detention. And in the film, he sort of explains the conditions he was subjected to while under detention. I know it was very, you know, very emotional, very strong sort of emotions that were shared. Can you share some of his experiences with our listeners?
He was actually subject to that. He was actually, I would say that in the condition of the detention center, it wasn't so great. So, while I was filming, my dad was sharing with me like the food, you know, they provided. It wasn't really a decent food. So that's why he and his friend actually organized a rotation for all the detainees there to do their role, to play their role. So they actually planted their own vegetables. Mm. So they cook themselves. They have their own chef. They would actually make use of everyone's expertise. Like you used to be a chef, you used to be a carpenter. You know, they would do all these things together. But again, they face like lack of medical support for those that who felt ill, and also violence, constant violence.
Mm-hmm.
He was first actually detained in Moa.
Okay.
It was later that they moved every detainee to Kampunting, because at the time Kampunting, the detention center, they complete the build of there. So
building.
That's why they move over. Yeah, they move over there.
Okay.
But I think making this film, it's really, I feel that, you know, it's very important, and this can contribute to the nation's narrative. And that is from my dad's experience. And of course that he would say that it was actually a very unpleasant memories for him. Yeah, he would say lah.
Okay.
But he organized everything, so they he knows exactly what would they face when they would release. So those extra vegetables they planted, they would sell it to the outside. So then they can keep saving. They also actually negotiate with the warden day to have libraries. Yes, to have newspaper.
Wow. And the wardens actually let it happen.
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
And so some of the detainees whom I know still now, those uncles, after that they went for took some Cambridge level exam.
Because of...
Yes. Oh, and, and many of them actually, they became the journalists.
Okay. So they tried to make the best of their time there because they had no idea how long they were going to be detained for. There was no end in sight, right? They just sort of went through the day, you know, just not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring in that sense.
Yes. And then at that time, ISA be able to renew every 2 years.
That's right.
Without going through the court proceeding, nothing. You just be there for every 2 years, you get a new contract. You know, that is what you would expect. So, of course, they make use of their time. My dad actually learned to do the woodwork, everything. And he was a very artistic person. I mean, he is a artistic person until now. Mm-hmm. Whenever I wanted to buy a painting, I would actually call him up to go with me. He has very good eyes.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I mean, in the film, he sort of shows some of the chairs.
Sling chair.
Yeah.
And then hand-painted holder. Yes, yeah. Hand-painted.
Hand-painted. And very beautiful. And he's kept it right up till today, am I correct?
Yes, and they are all at my place right now.
Okay, all right. Yeah. It's nice to hear that, but of course the conditions were horrible and he was never charged with anything, right? Like never?
No. Never.
Okay. Does he know, he knows for a fact though that he was detained because of his involvement with the Labour Party?
Yeah, he knew that.
Okay, all right. You know, in the film, you know, he shares all his experiences and I highly recommend people watch it and hear from him himself. You know, he's such a simple, sweet man, you know, but telling all these horrible things that happened to him. But it was really quite intense. But there's a very interesting incident that you brought up in the film, something I had not heard about, right? And that's a hunger strike that happened on the 29th of December. I can't remember the year, but 29th of December, right? What was this about? You know, what sort of triggered it? What happened after?
So it was actually because that there was one of the detainees decided to end his life. The reason he didn't receive medical support and made many complaints about it. So, and his request was denied. So he probably felt very depressed. So this thing actually happened in Kampung Ting Detention Center.
Okay.
But the hunger strike, but at the time that the warden in Kampung Ting, he granted all the wishes that the detainees made. Like, for example, held a funeral for him for the disease, and then let the family members come to take, you know, his body away. So it was actually quite smooth.
Okay.
But this news actually, I didn't know, he also didn't know that how would this bad news went to another detention center in Batu Gajah. So actually, Batu Gajah was the first that they started hunger strike.
Okay.
It was actually after 2 weeks, Kampung Ting also started the hunger strike. Okay. Not 2 weeks, maybe 10 days, that's what he said. Batu Gajah actually demand the authorities need to give an explanation why this thing happened. And they wanted an investigation. But at the time that the person who in charge Batu Gajah, the warden, according to my dad, he was a very difficult person. He was very, very brutal. So he started a press called in the FRU, the Federal Reserve Unit, to, you know, take on, you know, the detainees there. And then this new, after 10 days, it went back, traveled back to Kam Bon Teng. And Kam Bon Teng, those detainees feel like they were all comrades. So they wanted to support their friends suffering in Batu Gajah. So they also started hunger strike. So all in all, they started 47 days. Yeah, the whole hunger strike went on 47 days.
Wow, that's
a lot. Yeah, it's all together, as my father say, because itself, right, in 108 in Kam Bon Teng, there's already 139 detainees there. So they were all on the strike. And then back to the Batu Gajah, they were like almost 100 as well. So 8 up is like 200 something people all went on the strike. And then because of Kam Bon Teng started, then they feel that, you know, the authorities feel that this is very serious. So they move everyone from Kam Bon Teng to Batu Gajah. So upon the arrival, you know, at the Batu Gajah, they were beaten up. No food and water provided. And they were sent to single cell each.
Solitary and confinement. Lah.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very confinement. No light. It's all black. No light. He actually saw me when I filmed there. It means I filmed a file. Of course, I need an approval letter if I need to, you know, film something. Yeah. But I've actually filmed very far. So, like, just like he would say that, oh, the only visitor you could have is probably a pigeon. A small hole. Yeah, at a small hole. So, no, there were they. And then they were beat up. And every night, different people would call to the room to question or to do, like, persuade, you're not part of that. Why did you do this? You know, the authority will try to persuade you give up on this. So some of them, actually, their health condition not allowed. So they actually passed on.
Oh, my God.
Yes, they passed on. Some of them, I think because this actually not only the physical torture, it's also mental. Some of them suffer from mental health afterwards.
These are just crimes, you know. This is crimes against people. It's like blatant human rights abuses.
Yes.
It's appalling.
Yes, but I think at the time, probably authority thought that they were just doing their job.
Yeah.
So they just carry whatever they were told, they were instructed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then towards the end, it was a minister, he said, from Sarawak. He still remember his name is Wong. His MP is an MP, Wong from Sarawak at the time. He came in to have a negotiations with all the detainees. And it was also thanks to all the family members, the detainees' family members, they started protest in Dataran Merdeka.
Merdeka, okay.
Yeah, that was actually include part of it in my film as well, but a very short one. So there were photos. I'm still having the photos here because one of the ladies, she really trusts me. She gave me the whole set of the photos that taken by a journalist. They're all in black and white, and the brutality of the photos and those photos never published in any way. I thought that I would actually use to my next film to talk about my mom.
Okay.
And yeah, that was like my plan. Yeah, that was my plan. But it was like, thanks to those family members, you know, outside, they were really putting their effort to get everyone safe and make sure that, you know, this thing ends in a way that they should be. So, and then in the end, the government actually agreed a certain level of the condition that detainees ask. Like, you know, they have a better treatment in detention center, their food and their medical support. This is very important. And of course, you know, their access to the outside world.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Because at the time the hunger strike happened, my dad said, no more books, no more libraries, no more newspaper. They just want to completely cut down.
Right.
Cut you out off from the outside world, the connection.
Okay. I mean, in the film, you asked your dad, right? Did you belong to the Communist Party? And he gave a very interesting response. I really liked it. Maybe you'd like to share that with us, with our listeners.
Actually, the way that how I asked him is like, do you consider yourself as a communist?
Yeah.
Why would I ask this? It was actually back to, I think, when I was in high school, in junior high school. I once heard from one of my relatives saying that, your father was detained before. Did you know that? Because he was communist. Because it was like never heard of, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents never talked on this. This is not something that you would share at the dining table. So I never heard of. I was always like, why? But because nobody, and at the time I was probably that I wasn't very aware of what happened to my dad and my parents. So I just kept quiet. And of course, again, there's always a myth about communism and leftist movement in Malaysia.
Yeah.
People always tied any form of leftist movement back to communism, associate with communism. But this is actually not correct. These two different things. Okay, two different things. That's why that I wanted to hear from my dad what his view. Would he see himself as a communist because he's a leftist? Would he say no? He said no. He not seeing he himself communist. He said Labour Party was never a communist party. Was never.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually more toward like socialists. Yeah, socialists. They were actually fighting for workers' rights. Voices. They feel that there's no representative at the time in the parliament. So they want to have someone who can be an MP in the parliament to speak for their right. So that is their intention. Yeah. And all this actually came from the workers' union. Because the workers' unions started from factories all around, but the workers' unions has their limit. They have their limit to bring their voice to the parliament. Mm. So that's why later they think there is a need to form the Labour Party. To really have a proper persons, you know, to represent them, in the parliament, in involved in the policy making as well. So that's why. So he said that no, he's not a communist, and of course, Labour Party was never a communist party. No, nothing to do with that. It's just a leftist movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a leftist movement.
Just working for workers' rights. I mean, that was from the start, that's what they said anyway.
Yes, yes.
Fair wages and things like that, right? And proper working conditions. Okay. Your father was eventually released. And you also highlight, I suppose, what happens to him when he came out from detention, am I correct? Like, how did he actually? What were some of the, restrictions that were placed on him after he was released?
After he was released, he actually released on 20th December 1974. He was detained on 10th of March 1968.
Mm.
So it's about 7.5 years, almost 8 years.
Almost 8 years.
Yeah, almost 8 years. So he was actually placed under these conditions called movement restriction. It was actually like a contract and also renewed every 2 years.
Mm.
So he received 4 times, that means 8 years.
Wow.
So 8 years there inside the detention center, but 8 years outside.
16 years.
Yes. So the 8 years outside, it was like, it's 8 years. Mm. So every year, he would be called into the police station to give his statement. And the statement usually take about 2 hours. They would ask him various of questions. His movement is like from 6 p.m. until 6 a.m. the next morning. He need to be at home. Mm-hmm. He cannot go anywhere. And where he move around or working, it has to be within a district office, police office. Authoritative area.
Okay. So he couldn't travel or anything like that, right?
No.
Okay.
No. So that's why that he couldn't, and then they, and constantly they would send in someone to actually check. Actually, if I recall right now, right, I still remember when I was very young that I said in the very beginning of my film. I was about 10. There was someone at the door asking my dad. That was the time, and my mom said before that, never told my dad has gone away. That was the first time actually I heard. And I still remember vividly about the person, the two person came. It was at the door because I answered the door. So then they were asking like, you know, where your dad been? Has he been anyway or things like that? Then I remember that I said, no, he's home, something like that. And very quick, that very soon my dad came.
So that's
I experienced. The earliest part I experienced. But I mean, after that, I never pursue what happened. Until that I made this film.
Okay.
So everything was new to me.
Okay. Imagine that, right? I mean, for no actual charge, this was what he went through for 16 years. But we can see, you know, other individuals who have been charged with, you know, crimes allowed to freely roam around. It's really quite unjust. Never mind. Let's go for one quick break. I'm speaking today to Ashley Lim. She's the director of the film Kesa Ayaku, which explains how her father was detained without trial from 1968 to 1974 under the ISA. We'll continue that discussion after this one quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Ashley Lim. She's the director of the film Kesa Ayaku. It's another episode of our series Stay Home and Watch, where we revisit old, older films from the Freedom Film Network's film vaults. And with Kesa Ayaku is a film that Ashley made back in 2016 about her father, who was detained without trial from 1968 to 1974 under the ISA. So the film revisits, her father's experiences and what he went through. And, you know, there's some really strong emotions, you know, that come out through the film. You know, it's really, really quite heart-wrenching. I mean, I was in tears, even though your father is saying it in this most like matter-of-fact way, right? It's like, yeah, this happened. He was so calm about it, I suppose. How did you feel, though, hearing all those stories? I mean, you know, were some of those experiences that he shared new that you hadn't heard before? Yeah, how did you feel?
Actually, everything that he shared with me in the film, that was my first time hearing that when I interviewed. So somehow I was very shocked. I was actually very shocked. So that's why I need to... some part that I need to rewrite or reconsider how I put a sequence and the things that, you know, what is the most powerful, you know, the message that he gave and all these things. It's just like it's been hidden for many years.
Yeah.
If he never shared with me or if I never met this film, I would never know, I think. My parents wouldn't actually, you know, tell us intentionally what had they gone through in the past. One thing is he say in the film, it's not fair for children to grow up in that kind of environment, having to know their parents went through, you know, the hardship or, you know, detained without trial. So he didn't want us to be seen differently by others.
Okay.
But he felt it was also very important to tell. That's why when I make the film, right, I asked him, I mean, of course, I need to get his permission, whether he was okay to be filmed. And he was actually delighted to be filmed.
Okay.
And he thought this is untold and very important, a part of his history. And he actually, until now, he still believes only when you respect the differences and those untold stories to be revealed, you know, in the history, then our society will have the mutual understanding, the real mutual understanding.
Yeah.
So that we know our differences, we acknowledge the history. It's not that you wipe it off from your textbook. It's not something that meant to be kept, you know, under the carpet. You know, this actually has to be told and people would listen. Like actually, from the response from my audience or, you know, even my friends,
yeah,
they were all very surprised. It's all hidden. They never knew that we had this happen in our country before. So I think my dad is like, is very important, including like for his grandchildren to know about, you know, his past, his struggles, how he fought and contributed to the workers' right movement. You know, it's all very important. He said that human is like, they keep fighting their right. And every era has different demand and requests to the right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very important. He said, at my time, the low wages and the fair treatment, it was much needed,
yeah.
You know. But right now, we are looking at different aspects of the worker right. So he said that it is not fair to make comparison. Yeah, so not to make comparison, but every generation has their quest, you know, has their duty, responsibility to fight for their own right.
Okay.
He said his is the past. This is has gone through. That's why that in the film, I remember there was an audience when this first premiere in PJLA.
Yeah.
The audience asked, how do you feel about your experience and about the government and the country? He say, I never actually hate my country. I love my country. I love my country. That's why I speak out for my right.
Mm-hmm.
And I want a betterment of the country. And country and those who are in power, they are very different. It's two separate things.
Yep.
So I love my country, but not necessarily I support the authority. You have a choice for that. That's what he said, and he make it very clear. It's different, and he never, like, you know, all this while, he never taught us hate anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the past, even that he was badly treated or abused in the detention center, he would tell me the name of that, but he said that's let go. You know, bygones, bygones, and then you just let go of all these things. And this film that actually impact him in a way that he made a closure to his past.
Okay. Mm. That must have been really, I mean, that must have made you feel very happy as well, that you were able to help him in that process of, you know, finding closure, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So he was, as you mentioned, he was happy, I suppose, both him and your mom, I suppose, right? But were happy that their story was told. You know, when you revisited places like Kamunting and all of that, was that very emotional for him as well? Or he had just
it was.
Okay.
He was very emotional. I think he was like trying to calm himself and not to miss those things. I think he kept constantly, you know, rewinding
right.
whatever happened, and then told me every piece that he remembered. And
still fresh, right? Those memories.
Yes. Yeah. Mm, he was very, so that's why that he said, if not this film, he wouldn't come back.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said, this is not a place for him to revisit. I mean, every time he say, even like by, you know, he has to work, he travel, you know, from north to south, he passed by all these places, but he would never want to, you know, stop right there, even, you know, drop by or have to coffee or whatever. No, he just said that this is not a place for him. But because of I'm making a film, so he followed me to revisit those places. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry that, you know, he had to go, it must have been really tough for him, right? But I mean, this film is so important, you know, especially for people my generation or for people younger than us to realize what happened, you know, a first person account of all the trials that they went through. And you know, I think it's a very important unwritten history of Malaysia, right? And this is why, you know, is that why you wanted to make the film as well, to make sure that it is part of the narrative of Malaysian history?
Yes. Yes, that's right. I thought that this will be a contribution to the nation's building as well. And I really feel that, you know, we should actually, it's a diversified, you know, from different things.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's actually many of them has written up, but they're mostly written in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
I have books.
Mm-hmm.
I actually read my father's book. He has a good collections of all these things published by his comrades.
Okay. All right.
Yes, until now. So some of the books, actually, you probably can get from Gelap Budaya.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah. I think maybe one or two already only in English, but many of them written in Mandarin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of them. And actually, they wrote very, very nice stories. Many of them. I mean, my dad was only one of the many detainees. You know, that's what his personal experience. I believe they were out there. Many detainees had gone through the hardship as well, including our family members. And I remember my dad say some family members came into the detention center and tell the husband, I'm going to divorce you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's why some of them couldn't take it, so they took their life.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's really upsetting.
Mm. But it's, all these things happens, and but until now, right, my all these leftists, whether they're from Labour Party, or because Labour Party actually was declared illegal in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, they dissolved themselves in 1972, if I'm not mistaken. But all these things, until now, right, all the detainees, they have their union. Like towards the end, right, they were like Phoenix Union.
Okay.
They have all this, like, you know, club, yes, society. They still get together every year. But because of the FCO, they didn't get together. But they were all these elderly, they want to know, they are very inquisitive. So they learn themselves to go on Zoom to meet each other. Yes, it's true. Even my mom, the workers' union, right?
Mm.
She had Zoom like every week.
Wonderful. It's great to hear. I'm happy to hear that.
So she was like learning how to use Zoom on, you know, her smartphone, all these things. This is really admirable. I would say at my parents' age, she's already 80s.
Mm.
They would be on Zoom to meet their old comrades. Do you feel the smagat, you know?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That is really like, you know, how many of us until now, right, you have friends or classmates over 50 years that you still keep in touch. You know, that is so precious, like, you know, to me.
Yeah.
That is something that I always admire.
So the solidarity is still as strong today as it was then. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time, Ashley. But, you know, before I let you go, I guess, you know, for anyone who's coming to the film with a fresh pair of eyes, you know, never seen it, no context whatsoever, what do you hope that they will take away from it?
I think for that is like, I think my final message for this one, I would say that, of course, I made this film is to keep a family history, you know, it's very important. And I always want that this film actually show something that untold in the history. And the labor movement that started from my mom, my parents, or even earlier, you know, during Malaya and until now, and the workers are still struggling of their different aspect of benefits and different rights. And I feel that, you know, speaking up for yourself is very, very important. It's a part of the, you know, free speech, I would say, the freedom, you know, of speech. And of course, I always admire my parents about their strength and determination to make the society better. And I really feel, and they never thought that this is actually sacrifice. They were just there, that they were there, they were just doing their role. They were just there, they were just put there. So they were part of the historical cycle. It's not that they were very important person. No, they never seen themselves as an important person. They would just say that we were just there. We were just in the circle of that. So that's what happened. But it was really, really touching, especially compared to right now. I mean, our country has different, you know, not stability, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So people start looking away from the situation right now, you know, start not caring, start not coming back for the vote or anything because feel despair. But look at all these old lefties that they have gone through. You know, this is the courage and the determination. And even they are 80s.
Still.
They were still.
Still keeping in touch, still keeping abreast with, you know, the news.
Yes,
and
even
issues.
I was very disappointed with the state election or whatever. I was very disappointed. I shared with my dad.
Mm.
My dad said, no, don't give up your vote. You need to vote. even you're not happy with either of the parties, you need to vote. If you give up, you just give in yourself. You just make yourself compromise. Then what would you look for a better Malaysia?
Yeah.
So that is something that, you know, that I learned from my dad. Never give up. Even though you were in the situation, feel very disappointed, you know, all this thing, you know, hoping, whatever, you know, all this thing.
Yeah.
But you still have to do your part. You have to understand that you are part of the historical cycle. And this is what happened, and you play your role.
Okay. I think that's a wonderful message to end on. We all have a part to play in this, and not to give in, you know, not to give in or to give up hope. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Ashley Lim. She's the director of the film Kisah Ayahku. If you'd like to watch that film, and I highly recommend that you do, you can catch it on the Freedom Film Festival's YouTube channel. Just search for Kisah Ayahku or Stories from My Father. It's a 2016 film. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.